Memory Static is a listener-supported podcast. Your contributions really make a difference in helping us keep the show going. So please consider supporting us on Patreon at patreon.com/memorystatic. Enjoy the show.
Welcome back to Memory Static, the podcast that finds the movies you loved when you were little, talks about them, and throws a party to watch them. We have a new guest, new movie, and a new original song at the end of every episode. I'm the host, Bailey Moore, and my guest tonight is Katie Green. Welcome, Katie.
Hi, thank you for having me.
How are you doing?
I'm doing great.
I'm so glad you're here.
Me too. Thank you for asking me.
Yeah, I'm really excited. What movie are we going to be watching?
We will be watching Little Nemo, Adventures in Slumberland.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So, so we're watching Little Nemo, Adventures in Slumberland. And for anyone wanting to check out this movie at home, the DVDs are hard to come by. I actually tried to buy one off of Amazon, and it's still coming. I didn't notice until after I'd bought it that it takes about a month.
Oh, wow.
Before it's fulfilled.
Where is it coming from?
I don't know. That's a good question. But it isn't on any of the paid streaming services, but the whole thing is for free on YouTube. So that's how we're going to be watching it. So super easy for anybody that wants to watch it at home. So can you share why you chose this movie?
Sure. For me, this movie kind of hits that sweet spot of maybe just like two or three films that left enough of an impression on me to remember parts of them, but to still be wholly mysterious to me in large ways. I haven't seen this since I was 5 or 6.
Awesome.
So it's going to be really fresh, but there's a few really standout scenes for me. And also just this, my impressions of it now as an adult, but I haven't seen this since I was 6, or that that there's like this sense of dread rather than kind of like typical scary children's stuff, that it's more atmospheric and just these kind of spacious scenes and lonely landscapes that it's interesting to me.
Wow. So like you were like 5 or 6 the last time you watched this.
Mm-hmm.
Which that's kind of reaching way back in to the memory synapses, brain cells. So like you feel like most of what you recall are impressions of the movie, or do you have specific memories tied to the movie?
I do have some very specific memories, and then I don't remember the last 2/3 of this movie at all. But I remember this kid Nemo, and he's flying on his bed, and he has pet squirrel whose name is Icarus, I think, and they go to, I guess, what is Slumberland, and they meet the king of Slumberland, whom I remember being very juvenile and just kind of like this adult child who just wants to play with toys all the time. And I think he makes Nemo king and gives him a key to the city. And it's like, here's the key to the city. You can open any door except that one.
Wow, you remember a lot of specifics.
Yeah, I promise I didn't read a synopsis or anything. And so the scene that it's coming up to is the one that's so vivid in my mind of Nemo opening the door. And wait, is this a spoiler? Am I not supposed to give spoilers?
Well, you know, whatever. Like, if anybody isn't going to be upset by the spoiler coming up, you have been warned, and stop right now, watch the movie, and then cue it back up.
Okay. This clown who smokes cigars talks Nemo into opening the door, and then this like black, red, molten lava just oozes out onto everything and swallows up the king. And the scene is just like the most like dread inducing scene that I can remember, like from childhood. It was kind of similar to some of my nightmares that I was having around the same time. But and then after that, I just remember Nemo floating on a door in the sea, and there's like nothing around him, and trying to find the king and rewrite everything that he did.
You know, it's kind of remarkable the detail that you remember having not seen it since you were 5 or 6. It must have made quite an impression.
It did, yeah.
Well, I'm really excited to check in with you afterward and see how how it matches up to your memory.
Mm.
So, you know, I was going to ask you to give a summary of what you remember. So you kind of just like anticipated that. Would you say that the bed is a central object to the movie?
I can't really remember. It seemed like a central object, at least in the first 10 minutes. I'm not sure if it came back in after that.
Well, he flies on his bed to Slumberland the first time.
I remember that.
So I watch these movies leading up to this so I can, you know, understand my research better and whatever. But I was thinking about like a bed being a portal or to like dreams. And I was like, you know, it seems like such an obvious concept. And like the other thing that I could think of was Bedknobs and Broomsticks was similar. Mm. And I was thinking about it further and I was like, why isn't this a more common trope? You know, that your bed leads you into different worlds, because it does. And so I got curious and I was looking up folklore. I promise like all of this is tied in and I'm going somewhere. But I wanted to know if there was folklore or superstitions or stuff like about beds and about beds being portals. And the answer to that question is not really, but there is a lot of folklore about beds in kind of a dark sense of it being like a, like about beds being kind of a source of vulnerability. Mm-hmm. And that there's like external things that could harm you while you're sleeping and what you can do to protect yourself from that or to protect your dreams from that.
Okay.
And then also like to thwart bad luck. Like that's what a lot of like the folklore and superstition is about. And so my conclusion was that it might not be a big trope because perhaps like feeling safe while you're sleeping is a modern luxury.
Hmm.
But anyway, I wanted to share some of my favorite superstitions that I came up with.
Please.
okay. So you will not sleep well unless your bed rests east to west, the direction in which the earth revolves.
Hmm. I'm wondering about my bed direction now.
Yeah, I know. The first time you sleep in a strange bed, put a penny under your pillow for luck.
Hmm.
Children who snore will one day be rich. Do not sleep with moonlight on your face or your face will become crooked. A potato kept under the bed is a remedy for night sweats. Anything you dream while sleeping on a piece of wedding cake will come true. And it'll also make a mess. And this is the weirdest one. To prevent nightmares, smell your finger after you've held it 10 minutes between your little and fourth toe.
So specific.
I know. Like, one person did that once and it's like, I had great dreams last night. And then that's all it took.
Placebo effect.
Yeah,
that's a powerful thing.
Well, I mean, I think that's how like a lot of superstitions grow, right? Mm. You have a result once and it doesn't matter that it never happens again.
Right.
It happened the one time. So my point to all of this is that children are extremely superstitious and they create all sorts of strange rules like these to understand the world and to feel safe within it. So My question is, do you remember having any inventive mythologies about your bed?
Not mythologies about my bed, but I definitely had rituals to keep me safe and felt that vulnerability in my bed. So I was raised Catholic, no longer Catholic, but my cousins told me about hell whenever I was like 4 or 5 years old. And from then on out, I was terrified of going to hell. And my parents weren't like that kind of Catholic, and my church wasn't like hellfire and brimstone either. Mm-hmm. But so I would tell my mom that I was really afraid that I was going to go to hell. And she's like, yeah, I mean, hell's real, but you won't go there. You'll be fine. But then I was like, well, what if a demon possessed me and then I went to hell? So then my ritual for sleeping became totally revolved around saying like a whole litany of prayers, like 5 prayers, and then having to make the sign of the cross before I jumped in the bed, and then sleeping with a rosary underneath my pillow. Like I went full out. Also, I was afraid of being abducted by aliens because of unsolved mysteries. Anyway, I was never possessed by demons or abducted by aliens,
well,
to my knowledge.
You know, all your protections and wards, they worked.
Yeah.
they kept you safe.
They did.
I mean, I didn't have anything that specific. I did like the thing with stuffed animals, and I had like a rotation of my animals so they didn't get jealous.
I did that too.
And I also slept with the blanket way underneath my neck because I was afraid of vampires biting me while I was sleeping. And then I also made sure that my legs or arms never dangled over the side of the bed because I was afraid that something would grab them. But yours are much more interesting.
They're just kind of like obsessive and Catholic.
So that being said, do you feel like, do you remember if you slept well when you were younger, having those fears?
I think I slept well once I slept, but getting to sleep was sometimes an issue, because of those fears. And sometimes I would sleep on the couch or in the guest bedroom because I would feel safer, in those environments than in my own room. And not the best quality of sleep in either of those two places.
Mm-hmm. Were you afraid that the demons would find you more in your room?
Yeah. I don't know why. I mean, they didn't have very far to go. I don't know why the couch felt safer. Maybe it was because it was like
unusual,
closer to my parents. Or unusual, yeah. Like demon possession on the couch.
Yeah, the demons would just come and be like, hee-hee-hee, we're going to get her tonight. And they're like, oh, she's not there. I guess we're going home.
Yeah, I mean, that seems logical. Yeah. I think, to my 6-year-old brain.
Absolutely. Let's see. Do you remember any dreams or nightmares that you had when you were little?
Yeah. I had these two in particular, that actually kind of remind me of some of the images that I remember, or not exactly, but the kinds of landscapes or feelings from, Little Nemo. I had one where I was in a spaceship, like headed to outer space, and I was alone, and I had this awareness that I was going to die in space alone, but not for a while. And I was just getting further and further away from everyone and everything, and just feeling this dread. And I had another one where I was on like this passenger liner ship, almost like an abandoned cruise ship, but I was the only passenger. And there wasn't anyone steering it, and I was on the ocean, and couldn't see anything else. But then these two great iron doors rose out from the sea, and they just slowly opened, and the ship was starting to go through them, and I was just filled with terror. And then I would wake up. That was a recurring dream,
wow,
actually. So they weren't like the typical scary kid dreams. They were like more
ominous.
Yeah.
That's really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I feel like the scary dreams that I had always had some kind of villain in them that I was trying to run away from.
Or you're being pursued.
Yeah. Oh, that's very interesting. Yeah.
It's like that isolation was, I don't know. It was
and
really...
a sense of dread.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. One more question before we go into the slow-moving time machine.
Mm-hmm.
Can you describe the best pillow fort you ever created?
Yes. The best pillow fort I ever created was in college, actually. And I lived in a triple with my two best friends, and we had bunk beds, and we strung sheets all like up and down. So we had this like faux ceiling, and then we filled the bottom with pillows and blankets and comforters. And then we had this co-ed watch party of Alejandro Jodorowsky's El Topo, and passed around a flask, and it was a great time.
That sounds awesome.
It was, yeah. And then like the same group of people, we thought it would be really fun to watch Cello together, but it wasn't fun and we didn't finish it.
Oh. Did you also build a pillow for it?
No.
Oh, then that's where you went wrong.
Yeah.
So are you ready to get into the slow-moving time machine?
Oh, I'm ready.
All right, great. All right, well, yeah, make sure to watch your step.
All time machine systems online. Systems go.
All right, so here we are in the time machine. What's your first impression?
It is very colorful. I like the aesthetic in here.
I really appreciate that you brought that up. Eric and I worked really hard on the paint job in here. Like, but last season it was like kind of drab, and we thought like people will feel much better if we liven it up in here. So I appreciate
noticing.
Done. Thank you. And sorry for the sugar ants.
Oh, they're fine. It kind of tickles.
Yeah, I don't really know how to get rid of them. I've tried, but beyond getting something toxic, which I don't want to do, like they just won't stay out. And I think like it's because ants, like sugar ants, they're so sensitive to like tasty things. Like, okay, so you know there are some side effects to being in the time machine.
Oh, what are the side effects?
Okay, so essentially what we've done by stepping in a time machine, turning it on, it has split your existence into two. You are outside the slow-moving time machine, watching the movie with everybody else, while we're in here moving slightly faster than
Amazing.
Real time. So we'll finish around the time they finish, and then you'll rejoin yourself. But because of that, you might feel a little dizzy. You might feel a little confused. Just let me know.
Okay.
and also... and this is something I never really noticed for a while, but do you notice like a strange chalky sweet flavor in the back of your throat?
Oh yeah. It's like kind of like those like dipping sticks.
Yeah. No, it's a lot like that. I thought Smarties, but it's totally that because it's more sour than that.
Mm.
But anyway, I think that's a like some strange side effect of like altering the speed in which you move through time.
Mm.
And I don't know what it is, but I think it leaves some kind of sweet residue in the time machine, and it is attracting these sugar ants, and it is just so annoying.
It's kind of pleasant. I don't mind it.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
I'm glad it's not bothering you. well, then maybe I'll let them stay. So, Little Nemo, do you know anything about this movie? Like the way that, like how it came to be or anything like that?
I know nothing.
Great. Then I have a story for you. So I want to start with just briefly talking about cast and crew and stuff like that. I don't have a whole bunch to say, but so there are two directors. There was Masami Hata, who directed for Sanrio, and William T. Hertz, which... interesting little fact. Back in season one, we covered one of the movies. One of the movies we covered was Gay Paris, and we talked about the animator strike at Disney in 1941 and the creation of UPA. Well, William T. Hertz was the person that proposed the Disney animator strike. Mm. So that's pretty cool. And he's like one of the directors for this movie.
Wow.
Nemo is played by someone named Gabriel Damon. And he was the voice of Littlefoot in Land Before Time.
Aww.
Yeah. And then Flip, who's the cigar-smoking clown that you remember, is played by Mickey Rooney, who is...
What?
Yeah, right?
So weird.
Is by far, like, the biggest star in this movie, which we talked about. We talked about him and Josie and the Pussycats, who did the Andy Hardy movies. And Professor Genius...
What a name.
Yeah. Is played by Rene... Auberjonois. I looked up the pronunciation of that. I've seen his name several times because he was a Odo in Star Trek Deep Space Nine, but I never knew how to pronounce his name. It's just one you see all the time. and Princess Camille is played by Laura Mooney, and I don't know who else might find this interesting, but she did the voice of Katie Kaboom in Animaniacs. Hmm. And then... there are a couple enormous names in voice acting that happen to be in this movie as like really small roles, which is crazy because I'm not even sure which roles they play. At least one of them, Nancy Cartwright, who was Bart Simpson's voice in The Simpsons, has a really small role in this.
Hmm.
And Tress McNeil, who has done so many different voices. She does Dot in Animaniacs, Babs in Tiny Toons, Mom in Futurama, various voices for The Simpsons. She's also in this.
Hmm.
She's the elevator monster, I think. all right. So now on to the story. Okay. Do you know who Winsor McKay is?
No.
Okay. Winsor McKay created Little Nemo in Slumberland, which debuted in 1905. So that's how old these characters are.
Oh, wow. I had no idea.
Yes. And Little Nemo in Slumberland is considered his masterpiece. Mm. And it was highly influential for animators in the color palette and the style of art with thick black lines. And he was also a pioneer in animation himself. One of his... early films, which is often credited as the earliest animated film, although he'd already done a few others, is called Gertie the Dinosaur. You ever heard of Gertie the Dinosaur?
No.
Okay, so Gertie the Dinosaur, I mean, look it up on YouTube. It's interesting to watch. Like, it's not super entertaining based on like what our expectations are of being entertained, but it's really remarkable, the detail in it. But it was created to be a vaudeville act where Winsor McKay appeared on stage and he had Gertie the Dinosaur projected on the screen behind him that he had done all the drawings for. And he would give commands to the dinosaur and the dinosaur would react to it and do tricks.
Sounds really ahead of its time.
Yeah. I mean, like, nobody had done that before, which, like, I imagine, like, must have been... like mind-blowing in the vaudeville circuit.
Mm.
It's an extremely detailed, it has several frames per second, making Gertie's movements very fluid, and it highly influenced animated studios that formed in the years to follow, including Fletcher Studios and Disney. And Gertie the Dinosaur makes an appearance in Little Nemo. They actually put Gertie the Dinosaur in there. So, in the movie. So, like, when we rejoin ourselves, you'll remember seeing Gertie the Dinosaur.
Amazing. At least,
yeah.
Well, I know it's Gertie. Is there only one dinosaur?
Well, you know what? I think that I might have decided to play it before the movie. I can't remember. I'll remember when we step outside
Okay. Whether
or not I did that. I know that it sounds really confusing, but it makes sort of sense to me because it sounds like something I would do. If I were at the part, you know what I'm saying. So, time traveling gets weird. Thank you, Eric. Okay. So back to the movie. So that's just the background, the movie, Little Nemo in Slumberland. It was the dream of producer Yutaka Fujioka to create a full-length feature of Winsor McKay's comic series by showcasing the anime styles of TMS Studios, one of the oldest anime studios in Japan, and to also make it appealing to Western audiences.
Oh, that's interesting. I can see that.
Yeah. Yeah, because like when I was little, I didn't even know. I didn't know that it was anime. I didn't know what anime was.
Mm-hmm. It's got that kind of, from my memory, that spaciousness that anime or like graphic novels can have sometimes of, maybe I'm misremembering, but as I'm watching it right now.
Yeah. Precisely.
Yeah.
So at this point, there had never been a wide theatrical release in the United States of Japanese anime. There'd been like limited releases. To bring this dream out of Slumberland and into reality, one of the first things that he did was to go to the descendants of the McKay estate to get the permission to obtain the rights to adapt the comic strip into a film. And after the permission was granted, pre-production began in 1982. That's an important year to remember in the story.
Okay.
And the project became a joint effort between TMS Studios in Japan and the newly formed studio Kineta Graphics in the U.S. So, as I kind of implied before, collaborations between Japanese and American animation studios, well, they date back as early as the 60s, but that was with television animation. Nothing of this scale had ever been attempted. Nothing with a wide theatrical release intended for both Japanese and American audiences. So as can often happen with new and uncharted territory, this collaboration led to many creative differences, disagreements, and ultimately led Little Nemo into a prolonged production nightmare. Which I think kind of coincides with the storyline of the movie, right?
Yeah.
A huge sense of dread. So remember how I said pre-production started in 1982?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it wasn't released in Japan until 1989 and then not in the US until 1992.
Oh, wow.
So the delay in the US theatrical release was due to a desired G rating, and it just didn't make that with the original cut. So it led to 11 minutes being cut from the movie to appease censors. So I'm not even sure what that 11 minutes looks like.
It's fascinating. Like, what were those 11 minutes of the PG? What made it PG?
I don't know. Maybe it was too scary. I don't know. So a project this grand with such beloved source material as the Winsor McKay Little Nemo, it inevitably attracted many big names to be involved in the project, a lot of them. But because of the chaotic atmosphere, many of those big names came, witnessed the shit show, and quickly got out of Dodge. So I found a good anecdote that illustrates how unorganized and how poor the communication was on this project. So here comes one of those big names. Ray Bradbury was the original writer of the story. And at one point, Brad Bird, who is the writer and director of The Iron Giant, The Incredibles, and Ratatouille, and Jerry Reese, writer and director and animator of The Brave Little Toaster, both joined the American side of production, but found themselves lost and confused. They would often ask the animators what they were doing, and they would respond, and the animators would respond that they were drawing what Ray Bradbury sent over. So then they went to meet with Ray Bradbury to kind of get a better sense of what his direction was with the story. And he told them that, I'm just writing what these wonderful animators are drawing.
Oh my God. What a nightmare.
Right? So they didn't stay long after that.
Yeah. Can't blame them.
Yeah. I mean, you think you're getting into one thing and it sounds like a great idea. And it's just like, what am I supposed to do? So they're not the only ones to do that. Hayao Miyazaki and Isao Takahata, yes, were both involved in early stages of Little Nemo. Just for context, can you tell everybody who those are? You know?
Can you say that again?
Just for context, could you tell everybody who they are?
Oh, I know Miyazaki. I'm not familiar with the second, but Miyazaki is a writer and animator who created a bunch of wonderful anime like Spirited Away and Howl's Moving Castle. And
so the two of them, both of them actually directed movies for Studio Ghibli. Mm. And then they actually formed that a little bit after this, I believe. I don't actually have that straight in my head, but, so they were both involved in, the early stages of Little Nemo. But they both had creative differences with the storytelling and they left. And Miyazaki actually referred to his time spent on the project as the worst experience he's ever been through.
Oh my God. Don't pull any punches.
Yeah. No. Chris Columbus, who has directed many movies, including Home Alone, which we were talking about earlier before we started recording, and Richard Otten, were finally nailed down as screenwriters. And American and Japanese directors were permanently designated, and the animation production finally began in 1988. At about this time, TMS Studio was wrapping production on a second full-length anime feature, Akira, which is considered one of the best animated movies of all time. Yeah, Eric's face right now. Yeah, I thought that was really great. And so Akira was a commercial success in Japan, and its success aided in the delayed production and completion of Little Nemo. And Little Nemo actually started before Akira. So, like many movies that we've covered in Memory Static, Little Nemo didn't do great in the box office. First in Japan in 1989, and then in America in 1992. But that doesn't mean we love them any less, right?
Right.
Because, like, if there's anything that I've taken from doing all this is, like, I'm always stunned when I find out that things didn't do well in the box office because they're so well beloved now. Mm-hmm. And often they form a cult following or they're just, they gain appreciation. What's the word? Retroactively.
Oh yeah. I find for me that the movies that I loved most in childhood were not the box office hits.
Yeah. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
And it doesn't change. I mean, I still love them now when I watch them. I'm like, I think this is a great movie. I don't know what the critics are talking about, but here's the thing is that even though it didn't do well in the box office, it got fairly good critical reviews. I'm lost. Where am I?
Where are we going?
Hold on.
Okay, I think we're going to be okay, guys.
Okay. All right. Sorry. Moment of disorientation. Thank you for adjusting those levels.
You're good.
I don't know. Did you bump into them? Okay. So, yeah. It did. Okay. So, despite its poor office box office turnout, it didn't truly find its audience until its VHS release. And that's how I watched it. I don't know how you watched
it. Me too. Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't see it in the theater. All right. So after everything, because of the losses in the stakes of the film, TMS went on to focus on more local anime programs and became highly involved in animated Western-based productions, including Tiny Toons, Animaniacs, and Batman the Animated Series, which are three of my favorite cartoons. And I believe that they're responsible for the segments that have a better animation quality. But because of the whole experience, they never attempted any other big scale original projects like Little Nemo or Akira. They were just done with that. which I realize is a little bit of a bummer note to end on. So I wanted to say that you should look up the Winsor McKay's original source material. It's beautiful. Mm. You can find all of it online in the comic online library. And I think we're overdue to re-examine it as a source material for entertainment. Mm. I think that it would be incredible as a TV series. And I also wanted to say that I had a weird synchronicity while researching this.
Ooh.
I don't know if you know this, but I just got a flying squirrel as a pet.
Oh, how cool.
And yes, and like I didn't expect to. It's something that I've wanted for a really long time, but there aren't very many breeders, and the waiting lists are really long. And so it just kind of happened out of the blue, and it wasn't long after that that we decided we were covering this movie. And I pulled it up and started watching it, and what's one of the first things that I see? There's a flying squirrel in this movie named Icarus.
What's your flying squirrel's name?
Yakko.
Aw, that's great.
Thank you.
Yeah, wow. That must be a hard pet to get. I know sugar gliders are a big thing, but flying squirrel, that's pretty exotic.
Well, they actually, I mean, yes, they're more sugar gliders are more popular pets, but they're from Australia, and southern flying squirrels are from here.
Wow, okay. I didn't know that.
Yeah. I've been learning. It's fun. You want to go rejoin the party?
Yes.
All right, let's go.
All passengers must return to their respective times. Goodbye.
Okay, here we are at the end of Little Nemo's Slumberland. How does everybody feel? Great. And it turns out, like, once we've rejoined ourselves, that I did, in fact, show Gertie the dinosaur. What did you think of it, Katie?
Of Gertie in particular? I was very pleased to see Gertie make an appearance, and I didn't remember a dinosaur in this film at all. I didn't know if I would be able to pick her out, but I picked her out.
Yeah, so that was pretty fun. Is there anything that, like... occurred to you while watching it that you hadn't remembered, or does everything kind of check out?
I really didn't remember the last two-thirds of the film. Just like the first third was pretty vivid to me, but the little goblins came back to me, and I like thought of their name earlier today, and I was like, no, you're just making this up. And then it checked out.
Awesome. Well, we're gonna kind of Let's open it up to everybody else. Is there anybody here that have seen this movie before that has specific memories about it? Okay. All right. And say your name.
All right. Hi, I'm LG Adams. I'm an alcoholic. But,
Hello.
Thanks, guys. I feel the love. I feel the support. But I have a very specific memory of this movie, actually. And it's just like... the opening, or about, I guess, like 15, 20 minutes in, when Little Nemo's on the blimp and he's flying it around, and he doesn't like crash anything, but I have a very like specific nightmare where it's me as Little Nemo, and it's the cat from Pinocchio instead of the clown, and he's like telling me to drive the ship better, and all I can do is like crash it into clouds. And it was a terrible nightmare, but
the cat from Pinocchio is terrifying.
It takes them to like Pleasure Island and turns them into donkeys. Like, I'll never,
out of all the anthropomorphized animals, that is the
the alley cat.
Yeah,
like the alley cat.
You want to trust him because he's a cat. Exactly. And then he's like, no.
Mm-mm. But yeah, I remember watching this movie as a child. Like you said, 1992 it premiered in the States.
Yes.
And I wasn't around that time. It was like the VHS release. And I remember a friend brought it over and we watched it. And I had that nightmare the next night. And I was trying to tell people about this movie I just seen, and no one knew what I was talking about. Like, they're like, that's not a movie. Like, there's no creepy clown that leads this kid into nightmare land. Like, no, you're full of shit. And so it was like I was a teenager and Finding Nemo came out, and I was like, no, there's another Nemo movie. And everyone was like, no, no, you're talking about Pixar. You're talking about Finding Nemo, the fish movie. And I was like,
wait, so you watched this after Finding Nemo was already out?
No, I watched it when I was a child. And I was like a fugue state at that point, and I couldn't put anything together. And then Finding Nemo came out, and it all surfaced just like with Nemo and like an adventure. And I was like, there's another Nemo movie. It's way more fucked up than this. And it took me forever to find it, but I think somewhere like in my attic, I might still have the original VHS.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. It's definitely English, unfortunately, but I do have Cowboy Bebop on VHS too. But here we go. Passing the mic.
Do you still have this nightmare, or is this a nightmare you used to have?
It was a one-time thing, but I did have continuous nightmares about the Loch Ness Monster for no reason. It was like in a giant checkered palace, which doesn't make any sense, but
awesome.
Yeah. Thank you, Eric. Didn't pick that up.
I love it. Anybody else that has a Nemo related memory? All right, cool. Well, we'll move on to the other things. So since you were talking about nightmares, mm-hmm. One of the things that I wanted to ask everybody is if they had a memory of a nightmare that they had that really scared them when they were little.
When I was a child, I had a recurring nightmare that I was in the supermarket and my mom was missing because she often did that, probably because I would wander away from her. And I was at the checkout line, like beyond where everybody is checking out, and somebody would drive a shopping cart into me, and I would get run over by a shopping cart and I'd wake up terrified. And this was a nightmare for probably 6 months of my life until my mom told me that like it was a dream and I could control my dreams. And the shopping cart came at me and I told the shopping cart no, and the shopping cart stopped.
So when I was really little, I guess when Jurassic Park first came out, my dad took us to go see that, and I was way too young to see it for sure. And there's some other stories that go along with this that my mom told me about later about me being terrified in everyday life. But I vividly remember constantly having dreams about being chased by dinosaurs and being in my grandmother's house and waking up and running away from the dinosaurs and hiding in their bathroom, especially the velociraptors. And this was a constant thing. And I haven't had nightmares like this as an adult, but it was always so many dinosaur eating me dreams. And that's what I remember.
That's good.
This was LG again. But what I wanted to say was like, I didn't have the velociraptor nightmare so much as like, what were those things called? The spitters in it? Yeah, I would just have dreams that that thing would just like spit in my eyes and then I was blind and I'd have to run away. I had some great nightmares thinking back on it.
You kind of reminded me of a recurring nightmare that I had. It wasn't dinosaurs, but I haven't thought about this in a while. I think that this was inspired by, I don't know if anybody here has seen it, the Jack and the Beanstalk cartoon with Mickey Mouse. And, yeah, I think that it was Donald and Goofy. He lives, I don't think so. Oh, or maybe Pete is the giant. It's been a while. He's the giant. Okay. So, I think it was inspired by that, but I would have this dream that there was this giant that was really wreaking havoc over like a provincial area that I belonged to, that I lived in some village, but it was like the nearing villages were being decimated by this giant, and the giant was being controlled by a witch, and I alone could stop the witch, and I would try to like reason with the giant, but the giant didn't have the ability to like be reasonable, like, yeah, because it was really the witch that was calling the shots. So like I had to like figure out how to defeat this witch so the giant would stop smashing houses, and I had this dream when I was very little, and then I stopped it was a recurring dream, and then I stopped having it, And then when I was in third grade, I started having the same dream again. And then it stopped again. And then when I was in middle school, I started having this dream again. I haven't had it since, but maybe since I'm bringing it back up, maybe it'll happen again.
Oh, yeah, I'm going to tell my dinosaur nightmare now, which is very brief, and it only happened once, and it was just after I had watched the movie Zathura, which I don't remember very well, but I remember the dream I had, which was, I don't know if it really qualifies as a dream, because, like, I was definitely still awake, you know, I was in bed and lying there. And I looked over and saw that the bedroom door was opening, just cracking. And this, like, fucking velociraptor-looking dinosaur creature crawled out of the door and just, you know, slinked over to the bathroom door and went into the bathroom. And that was it. And I was just like... Well, shit, there's a dinosaur in my bathroom now. I don't know how to deal with that. yeah, so that was a fun time. I went into the bathroom. There wasn't a dinosaur there, so I don't know what happened to it. I was just going to the bathroom, I guess. And I also have another dream that is not a nightmare, but Bailey wants me to share it, so I will. This happened. How old was I? Do you remember? No. Okay. So I'm guessing I was like 8, maybe 8, 9, 10, somewhere around there. I am younger than her. anyway, so I had this dream that I was in this palace in the sky. With Nintendo 64 graphics, and I was sent there as an assassin to kill the king who lived in the palace in the sky, and so I like knocked out the king's chef and, you know, put on the chef clothes as one does. And sprinkled a little something on the king's dinner that was presented to him. And he didn't have a taste tester or anything, so this is kind of on him, right? But so he takes one bite out of this lavish meal, and as he's chewing, a look of confusion covers his face, and he says... What a strange flavor. I know it. Is it cinnamon? Blueberry? Raspberry? And then the meal responds to his question by jumping off of the plate, screaming, "Mashed potato!" and then killing the king. And then I was the king.
Helen hated mashed potatoes.
It's true. I still do. They're disgusting. I don't understand why people like eating mush. But, you know, I'm glad you have things that you like. Well, I don't see how that's relevant.
All right. When I was growing up, I would have a reoccurring nightmare in which I wasn't in the nightmare. I was a passive observer, and it would be my brother bouncing a ball in the middle of our living room, and there was a fire burning in the fireplace, and typically there's a grating around the fireplace. But there's never a grating around the fireplace in the dream. And he would be bouncing the ball. And then eventually, he'd hit the ball in just the right way that it would bounce into the fireplace. And into the flames. and he would follow the ball into the flames. And he would always burn and die in the flames. And he would turn into an ash creature that would crawl out of the fireplace and solemnly walk outside of the door and into the street to join the other ash creatures that were walking in the street. And then I'd wake up.
I had a... The first dream I can remember was after watching Wizard of Oz. And it was because of the grumpy trees. So I had a dream where I was like a squirrel creature. And my best friend was a skunk creature. It was just a skunk. And we were like walking along this path and there were two paths in front of us. And one of them like kind of like went in a long curve and like got to the destination. And the other one just went straight there. And the one that went straight there was like in the shade under like this huge tree. I was like, all right, cool. We're going to go this way. This is the obvious right choice to go to our destination. And my skunk buddy was like, nah, we're going to go this other way because I know this better than you and we're going to go this way, okay? And I didn't believe them, the skunk. So I went the way that made sense and like a fool. And as soon as I got under the branches of the huge tree, it picked me up. And I like was scrambling to get away and ended up like wrapped around the huge trunk. And then a huge, meaty tongue comes out of the trunk of the tree. And the tree just starts, like, twisting. And the tongue's flopping as the tree twists. And my skunk buddy fled because they're like, I'm going to the destination. I told you so.
Dreamt about Harry Potter before Harry Potter existed. What's
the Whomping Willow?
Yeah. Yeah, but with a tongue.
Was that your first sexual dream?
No, these were the trees from Wizard of Oz. They talked.
Dreaming about wood.
Oh my gosh. You know, it's interesting. Before we move on, I had a dream about the trees from Wizard of Oz too.
They're scary.
I think that it really gets in your head because, like, you know, Dorothy Gale's going up there and then they start throwing apples at her. And it's like, what did Dorothy Gale do? Who knows? But I remember having a dream where I tried to reason with the trees and being like, hey, stop throwing apples. And I feel like I'm not the only one that's had that because I feel like someone else told me about that. Anyway, let's move on.
What?
Were the apples reasonable?
No. They just wanted the trees. Well, I mean, the apples weren't sentient, just the trees.
That's what you think.
That is what I know. All right, so who has really great slumber party stories?
Okay, so for my best friend in probably like elementary school, it was her fourth grade birthday party. Fourth grade birthday party. And I hadn't really met her friends before. So we had like a whole group gathering and I met all of her friends and she's like, hey, we didn't tell you this, but we're going to go toilet papering. And I was like, cool, I guess. I don't know who any of the people were toilet papering. But apparently... her mom had called one of the houses beforehand and told the mom that we were going to toilet paper her house. And they were like pranking the kids. And the mom had given her mom at a pair of the guy's like boxer shorts, and we strung it up on like a flagpole and strung it up at the very top, and he woke up the next morning with his boxer shorts is up there. So like some poor strange kid in fourth grade humiliated. Yeah, I felt so bad. I don't know who it was. Oh no, that's a lie. I did actually I knew his name, but like kind of peripherally. And then years and years later, I was at their house for like a family gathering or whatever. And his dad, I guess his parents were there and I didn't know. And his dad introduced himself to me. He's like, oh yeah, you know, we're parents to Trent. And I was like, I strung your son's boxer shorts up a flagpole once. And there was just dead silence. And he goes, he deserved it.
When I was young, I hated slumber parties. I liked everything until going to bed. I hated going to bed at slumber parties, so I would try to stay up all night. And there was this one, I forget what we did, but everybody else was asleep, and I was doing my usual thing of wandering around trying not to go to sleep. And I ended up outside on the trampoline, and I fell asleep on the trampoline. And in the morning, they had an automatic sprinkler system, one of those ones that oscillates back and forth. And so I'm sleeping, and I have this dream, again, kind of nightmare, kind of just weird, of it raining and then being sunny, and then it raining, and then it being sunny, and then it raining, and then I wake up, and I am soaked with the sprinkler hitting me, and then not, and then hitting me, and then not.
When I was a kid, I would go over to a friend of mine's house, and we'd play video games all the time, usually into the wee hours of the morning. And I remember this one particular time that her dad, I can't remember exactly what the story was, but he decided to freak us out. And we had to have been like late elementary, probably like fifth grade or something. And he told us this ghost story about how somebody had like hung themselves in the house and then waited until way later in the night and then like knocked on the window and like started doing all this creepy stuff. And we were like, what is this? This is terrifying. And finally the next morning after all night, we're like freaking out and doing all this stuff. He's like, that was me. And we're like, Dad, you're terrible. Why would you do this? And after that, we'd never believed him again. We're like, you're a liar. No, this isn't scary anymore. Stop it.
I've got one more. Sorry. Go. Okay. Really quick. I was, this was when I was a bit older. I was probably 16 or 17, and we were over at a friend's house, and we had watched some movie, The Texas Chainsaw Massacre, or some other scary movie like that. And nobody had seen it except for the guy's house who we were in. And he had snuck outside, and he was waiting outside this giant glass wall. The entire wall was glass, and that's where we're all sitting. And right at one of the jump scares, he slams on the window and scares us all. But we're all like these tough 15, 16-year-olds, so we're all trying to pretend like we're not scared the entire time. And we're like slowly working our way as far away from the window, while not touching each other, because we don't want to do that. But we are just crammed in the corner by the end of the night.
Okay, so back when I was a young whippersnapper, and I was not allowed to stay up all night playing video games, I went over to my friend's house, and we would stay up all night playing video games. And that was exactly, that's what you do as a kid, right? But his parents very much were not okay with this. So this was not something that we did proudly. It was kind of, you know, blanket over the door, pillow shoved underneath the frame, hid away in a corner underneath the bunk bed type thing. But one Friday at night, when we stayed up a significant portion of the night and kind of got about 2 hours of sleep before we kind of stumbled back downstairs for breakfast, and we all sat around the table, and his mother was the homemaker type, and so she made the whole nine yards: pancakes, waffles, eggs, bacon. Such a wonderful, wonderful lady she was. And we sat down as a family, plus me, And his dad asked, like, so how was your guys' night? And without thinking, I started talking about what we were doing. And that is the story about how I got my friend grounded for 2 months.
Oh. Ilya, you made me think of something. It was not really a slumber party, but it was like a situation where there was a lot of people sleeping in the same place. When I was little, my dad and my uncles and my cousins would all go to this deer lease that was out in West Texas. And there was like this one room that was like this long bunk room where there was several beds in a row. And one night I woke up thinking that I heard my name. And then, like, you know, I froze in my bed and every muscle in my body stiffened. And I was like listening really, really hard into the silence and the darkness. And then I hear Bailey. And I'm like, oh my God, I hear that. That was real. And so I wake my sister up who's sleeping next to me. And I was like, listen, someone's calling my name. And we listen and we listen and we listen and nothing happens. And she just rolls over. She's like, Bailey, go back to sleep. And I try and then I hear Bailey. And I was like, did you hear that? And she was asleep again. So then I went and woke up my dad and I was like, dad, like there's something, like I keep hearing my name. It's really scary. And he's like, and we listen and there's nothing. And we go back to, he goes back to bed and I get back in bed and I hear Bailey. And I was like, oh my gosh. And I didn't sleep all night long. And then the next day, I realized there was this little window that was above my bed that led into a bunk room into the next room. And my cousin was like looking through the window and waiting for every opportunity, just waiting in the dark to be like, okay, here's the next time. Bailey.
Which cousin?
My cousin Neil. He was definitely trying to scare me. Neil, if you're listening, you're the reason I can't sleep now.
So this isn't like a particularly fun story, but or a sad story, honestly. I don't know why I started off like that. But me and my best friend for a long time, like we grew up together. Our little sisters were the same age and like we were all born about like a month apart. So like my little sister was the same age as his little sister and I was the same age as him. So we just have sleepovers together. But that was like kind of fun. My sister and his little sister Adrian used to write us notes and like pass them under the door, and they were always like childish. Like it doesn't make any sense, but like we just stay up all night and hang out. And what I remember specifically was he had an Xbox and he got Halo, and he also had an iPod, and so he'd plug his computer speakers into the iPod and we would just listen to whatever he had like soundtrack wise and play Halo. And you guys remember that song, The Hamster Dance? Like, do-do, dee-da, dee-dee-do. Exactly. And I'll never forget, like, it's the middle of the fucking night, and he's blasting Hamster Dance, and we're playing Halo 2-player, and it's, like, the Flood running around, and, like, these little tiny, like, mold monsters that look a lot like hamsters just jumping on us and exploding while, like, da-dee-da-dee-da-do-do is going on. I'll never forget that particular moment. It's just, like, whenever I listen, I don't listen to the Hamster Dance now, but like if I ever hear that song or like if it comes up on a, like actually, no, I listen to it now and I instantly remember being like 12, 13 years old, the middle of the night playing Halo with like my best friend at the time. And it's kind of amazing just the connections to memories you make, but God.
You reminded me of this time that wasn't, I guess it was kind of a sleepover, but I had a similar situation where my brother was friends with the older brother down the street and I was friends with the sister. And there was also like another kid on the street that would hang out, and we ended up all, it wasn't really a slumber party, but it turned into that later because we'd always like hang out on the weekends and evenings and stuff. And for some reason, our parents thought it was a really good idea to take us to go see Mystery Men. And we were probably like fourth grade or something, maybe even like younger than that. And they dropped us off as little kids, like a bunch of us at Mystery Men. And there was nobody else there. I think the movie had been on for a long time. We sat in the front row and we just spit wads at the movie screen for the entire time that the movie was happening, because we're all by ourselves and nobody else was in this movie. And that is what we did. And I think it was like a Friday night and it was amazing.
All right. Well, Katie, how did you feel about watching this movie with a group of people?
It was not terribly different from how I remembered. And it was pretty satisfying. It wasn't nearly as scary as I remembered it being. It wasn't as pausey as I remembered it being, too. I remember it having a lot more kind of spaciousness throughout it. But yeah.
I wonder if that was whenever he woke up. Because I think, like, you know, just like with the slow moving time machine, when we're kids, like, things seem to take a lot longer than they do now.
Yeah.
And so movies felt like a huge experience. Whereas we watch them now and it was like, you know, an hour and 30 minutes of our time, you know?
Totally.
I don't know. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And also, too, I think kind of like more recently, that's an aesthetic of having, especially with like Miyazaki, having more space in film than I misremembered at the time.
So like we're all here in pajamas and we've got blankets and pillows everywhere. And I feel like more than any other Memory Static episode, like this sharing portion that we've had has felt more like a slumber party than any other one that we've ever had. do you have like any slumber party stories?
I just have like little snippets rather than whole stories, but second grade was a particularly good slumber party. That's whenever the Aqua CD came out and we just had like a dance party to the whole album and played Nintendo 64.
Like the Barbie song?
Yeah. Yeah. But there was a lot more too. It was like
that's the only one I know.
It's a pretty solid album.
I have a very specific memory to like the first time I ever heard that song. Like we were driving back from Astroworld in Houston, because I grew up in Houston, and my mom had dropped me and a friend off at Astroworld for the day, and she picked us up, and we went home, and it was the first time we ever heard that song. We're like, is this real? Is this a real song? Yeah, anyway, yeah. Sorry.
No, that's it. That's the end of the story.
Well, so do you have any observations of, like, how the movie might have changed for you, or like your perception?
Yeah, I think my memory of it as a child was that there was like a much deeper sense of dread, and that it was a lot more atmospheric than it was watching as an adult. I spoke to a little bit earlier, I don't know. It seemed like in my memory he was floating on the door in the ocean for a lot longer by himself than whenever the professor came. Mm-hmm. And I think that was significant to me because it resembled a lot of my nightmares of just being sort of in these isolated, being isolated in these sort of desolate landscapes. It kind of checked out for the most part from what I remembered.
Well, did you enjoy it?
Yeah, I did.
Well, good. I'm glad. I thought it was a lot of fun. And yeah. Thank you so much for choosing it.
Thank you all so much for watching it with me.
Yeah. So thank you everybody for coming. And we hope to see you next time. And thank you for listening to Memory Static. Return your videos here.
Grant me peace. Dios San Morpheus, deep into my soul, you make my night less cold. Half my life is yours to hold. Half my life is yours to hold.
Memory Static is hosted by Bailey Moore and produced and edited by me, Eric Dumick. Special thanks to Katie Green for being the guest on this month's episode. And special thanks to Geronimo, Delilah, and Yakko for hosting the party. Original music for this episode is by Colin Moore. If you like the show, please consider supporting us on Patreon at patreon.com/memorystatic. Also, if you're listening on Apple Music, please consider giving us a rate and review, as this will help us get out to more listeners. As always, thanks to our guests for coming out and enjoying the party with us. Thanks for listening.